The following episode of Annals on Call is brought to you by Annals of Internal Medicine. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and participants during this episode are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the American College of Physicians, the editors of Annals of Internal Medicine, or the institutions that the speakers are affiliated with unless so identified. All relevant financial relationships have been mitigated. Information contained herein should never be used as a substitute for clinical judgment. For more episodes, links to CME and MOC, or to view disclosures, visit go.annals.org/oncall.
What the article is advocating for is some kind of extension of primary care into secondary care, provided it can be done safely and with adequate support.
Welcome to Annals on Call, a podcast based upon articles from the Annals of Internal Medicine, in which we discuss the implications of the article for you, the listener. This is Dr. Bob Centaur. I'm Professor Emeritus at the University of Alabama at Birmingham and former Chair of the Board of Regents for the American College of Physicians.
This episode of Annals on Call features an article titled Advancing Clinical Mastery, an Essential Element of Primary Care Revitalization. Joining us is the author of this piece, Dr. Richard Kravitz, who is a distinguished professor of medicine at UC Davis. He's a researcher who has focused his career on primary care quality, health communication, and care individualization. He also does primary care himself and supervises residents in primary care. We hope this discussion stimulates your thought process. Rich, thank you so much for joining the podcast. I really enjoyed your piece in the Annals, and it reminded me of what internal medicine was when I was a resident, which was in the mid-70s, and internists then did both inpatient and outpatient. They usually had multiple patients in the hospital, would make rounds in the morning and then go take care of patients in the afternoon. There weren't a lot of consultants around, so they didn't get a lot of consults. They took care of most things by themselves. Things have obviously changed dramatically over the last 50 years, and now we sort of have a major separation between outpatient medicine and inpatient medicine. The inpatient doctors are supported by hospitals. The outpatient doctors are not supported as well. And there are a lot of factors that are impacting what they now call primary care. And we might talk a little bit about that phrase later. But what are the factors that you see for primary care internists that are making it difficult for us to grow that, why there's such a shortage of primary care physicians, and just opine?
First, thanks, Bob, for having me on the podcast. As you know, I'm a big fan, and it's great to be on with you. I guess to summarize the piece, I guess the most controversial part is probably that the way to save primary care, including primary care and internal medicine, is to ask ourselves if we can do more, not less. But the problem in outpatient internal medicine and primary care more generally is that, I guess it's three or fourfold. There's been a real explosion of tasks, both clinical, including preventive care checkboxes, and administrative tasks. There's a set of RVU-based productivity standards in many health systems where the product is pretty far removed from what we're aiming for in terms of better population health and better patient experience. It's a matter of producing widgets in terms of direct patient care visits. There's a lot of QI standards that, well, the measures are reliable, they may not be measuring the most important things that we do. And as you alluded to, the separation of outpatient internal medicine from hospital medicine has denied outpatient internists the opportunity to interact with medical subspecialists on a regular basis, which was a source of professional development, camaraderie, and just professionalism in general.
Well, as you know, I like to be controversial. I've heard some say that one of the biggest mistakes we made in internal medicine was declaring our outpatient physicians as primary care. And if that view is correct, what I see in your piece is that clinical mastery is sort of a combination between primary and secondary care, maybe not tertiary care, but primary and secondary care. And did we make a mistake by using that term for all the good reasons that it was done? And it was done while I was a resident. I remember going to the early meetings of the Society of General Internal Medicine where we were so excited about primary care. But was that a mistake?
Terms matter, certainly in terms of how they get us to think about things and how we brand ourselves. The term primary care makes a lot of sense as a health services research concept. It's the bottom of the population pyramid. It's where most patients get most of their care most of the time. And outpatient internal medicine needs to play a role there. I think actually you're quite right that what the article is advocating for is some kind of extension of primary care into secondary care, provided it can be done safely and with adequate support. So I don't know. There's been a lot of attempts to rebrand primary care. Internal medicine is something else, like terms like comprehensivist or complexivist or officist have been thrown around, and none of them have really stuck. So, I think we probably do need a new term. I'm not sure what it is. Some have advocated for the term principal physician, but that has its own problems. But I think you're right. Another aspect of this is that despite what we might think, we don't live in 1993 anymore. That's the year when Michael Lacombe published an article in the Annals describing his day as a rural general internist in Maine. And, a few things that he mentions as part of his day were treating a middle-aged man with new-onset Parkinson's, an elderly lady with muscle pain and a high sedimentation rate, implanting a permanent pacemaker, performing a right heart catheterization, et cetera. So those days are really over. But I think we might be at the threshold of imagining some new kind of primary care. And I think we need to acknowledge that outpatient internal medicine currently isn't that different from the kind of medicine practiced by our family medicine colleagues. So that's a concept for another piece, but there may be opportunities for some kind of merger there as well.
Well, what's beautiful about your idea and opinion piece is that you use the term clinical mastery and you describe it some, but maybe you could give some examples of what you envision in a clinical master who takes care of patients but tries to appropriately limit consultations.
Right. Well, the way I describe clinical mastery is that it's both an aspiration and a process. The aspiration is to be able to do more on behalf of patients, to take care of a greater scope of problems or even the same scope with a greater depth of expertise. And the process is one of continually getting better, continually growing. Research in continuing professional development arena has showed that physicians, like many professionals, actually plateau in terms of their ongoing professional development sometime in mid-career. Some of that may be due to just lack of deliberate practice and opportunities to continue developing as experts.
So let me throw out some ideas, and then you tell me whether this would fit. The nephrologists are overwhelmed with patients. A lot of patients have significant chronic kidney disease, and we'll say that's stage 3B. That's an estimated GFR somewhere between 30 and 44. Those patients have complications. The knee-jerk strategy is just go ahead and let renal take care of it. But perhaps a clinical master could take care of that. Another great example is patient has HFrEF, has heart failure, and has been your patient for 20 years. And now it's just a question of assessing the medicines. Do they need to see a cardiologist all the time, or should they see a cardiologist occasionally? And the last one, which I think is really gaining a lot of internists to adopt, is the value of POCUS, the value of ultrasound. Many classes at the ACP meetings, both at the regional meetings as well as the national meeting. And I think it gives an outpatient internist a sense of clinical mastery and allows them to do things and make decisions that they weren't able to do before. So that's my brief way of thinking about it. Please reflect.
Yeah, I think that's great. In part, this article is inspired by my experience in resident clinic, where it's now not uncommon for patients with diabetes type 2 to be referred to endocrinologists, not just to be referred for one-time consultation, which, by the way, is part of this imagined scheme of clinical mastery. It's not dispensing with consultation. In fact, it's working with subspecialists in different ways. But patients with diabetes going to endocrinologists and then staying there, patients with allergic rhinitis who haven't been given an adequate trial of medical therapy or nasal corticosteroids referred to allergy, patients with dysfunctional uterine bleeding referred immediately to OBGYN. Sometimes a one-time consultation is needed for a procedure or for, the provision of specialized diagnostic acumen in the beginning. But certainly many of these patients can be managed in the generalist setting, especially if we take advantage of various means of support that are developing. Some of them are technological, as you allude to, point of care ultrasound. Artificial intelligence is going to have a big impact. We'll probably expand the scope. I think it's already beginning to expand the comfort zone for general internists for certain conditions. And some of them are ways of enhancing collaborative care, for example, the collaborative care model in mental health, but also electronic consults, which have gained popularity within many systems. And then there are focused ways of developing specialized expertise over the course of a career in which generalists can serve an intermediate specialty role within their own practices. An example is the primary care mental health certification program run out of UC Irvine.
Every good idea has to be judged with a pre-mortem exam. One of my heroes of cognitive psychology is a guy named Gary Klein, and he invented the pre-mortem exam. The pre-mortem exam is 2 years from now, a lot of people adopt this. What could go wrong?
Well, lots could go wrong if it's not supported. The beauty of this scheme is that it doesn't have to be implemented all at once, but it will require investment from systems. For one thing, the plate of most primary care physicians is already quite full. There's been estimates of the amount of work that would actually take to fulfill all of the various practice guidelines amounting to roughly 27 hours in a day, which obviously doesn't exist. So there's a lot to do. And if as generalists add more to their plate, there isn't some clearance of tasks that currently don't require their expertise, then there's just going to be a sense of being overwhelmed, and there'll be a lot of resistance. So that's one issue. There will need probably smaller panels for physicians as they grow their scope and sort of, as you suggest, merge into secondary care. We'll need more robust teams. We'll need a lot of system investment, and there'll be resistance to this from systems because it requires upfront costs. But if, as one of the references in the piece suggests, something like 50% of follow-up visits within subspecialty arenas are for routine or preventive care that could probably be handled in a more general setting. That could free up lots of specialty slots for patients and sort of unjam the system and allocate resources in a more efficient way than we're already doing, because some would say that the biggest problem facing the country domestically is the 20% of the economy that currently goes to healthcare. So those are the main things that could go wrong. If panel sizes stay the same and there's no teams, we're just adding more to an already full plate. If generalists are not given access to, or they don't seek out subspecialty help when needed, then patient safety problems could arise. And looking far into the future, if training doesn't change, the doctors that our system puts out won't be prepared to assume these new roles.
Well, thank you so much for writing this piece and for joining me on the podcast. You've given us a lot to think about, and I think it's a topic that we need to do more thinking about, because when I see my colleagues who are doing primary care, they're often frustrated by time constraints, by the never-ending need to add extra patients in and see them too fast, and the difficulty of dealing with all of the things that were supposed to improve care that all they really do is frustrate physicians and don't really help patients. So you made us think, and that's a great thing, and I cannot thank you enough.
Thank you.
Now it's time for Bob's Pearls. Dr. Kravitz focuses on primary care as once including much secondary care, and unfortunately, I think both for patients and for physicians, too much secondary care is now offloaded to others, rather than having a one-time consultation to the general internist to take care of the patient in the future. Patients get transferred for a particular part of their care to a subspecialist. He focuses on this concept of clinical mastery, which would lead to less ongoing consultations and caring for greater scope of problems. He gives good examples of this and really focuses on the concept of a one-time consultation rather than ongoing consultation often. This is a very interesting, somewhat controversial ideas and opinions piece, and both Rich and I hope that you will think about the implications and go back and read the article, which I think is very, very informative and well written. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast.
Information contained herein should never be used as a substitute for clinical judgment. For more episodes, links to CME and MOC, or to view disclosures, visit go.annals.org/oncall